chapter 7, core 9, the complete perfection. So, the pastime to awaken Krishna from his spiritual ecstasy, anxiety, is over. And Uddhava is has informed the Dwarkavasis who had gone to New Vrindavan to watch from a distance this pastime unfold. Uddhava informed them that they should now go back to the palace. And meantime, he also arranged that Padmavati, who was a contrary personality, would be engaged somewhere else so that Krishna could actually explain to the Dwarkavasis what had just happened and why. So now we're going to hear Krishna's own explanations for what just happened and why, which is the essence of this book. And there's not exactly, 90 verses in which Krishna is going to explain what just happened and why. So we'll begin with text 17. Mata Chadevaki Putram Ashirvir Abhinandyatam Bhogasam Padanayasya Kala Vigyadritam Gata. Jai Shri Krishna Balaram Ki Jai Ho Shri Viraj Govardhan Jai Ho Shri Giri Govardhan Jai Shri Ji Govardhan. Translation. Mother Devaki greeted her son with blessings. Well aware of what time it was, she quickly went to prepare his meal. Commentary. Devaki's excusing herself from the company of Krishna's queens left Krishna at liberty to discuss with them frankly the matter which is the essential message of this chapter, the supreme devotion of the young gopis of Raj. Krishna felt too much filial reverence for his mother to talk about this openly in her presence. She knew that it was time to cook for Krishna, and on a deeper level, she also understood that now she ought to take her leave. So, even in the spiritual world, not everything is discussed everywhere in front of everyone. That is the nature of personal relationships. Devaki is in the Vatsalya Ras, she is in the maternal mood, Krishna. And aside from, you know, wanting Krishna to feel free to talk to his queens about matters of conjugal love, which are out of place when the parents are around, she also had her duties as his mother. It was time to cook Krishna's meal. The Rajvasis do their duties for Krishna according to their relationships unfailingly. Even when Krishna is gone and they're feeling his separation so intensely that they cannot even maintain their own bodies properly, still they do the things that they did while they were with Krishna every day. Why? Because their consciousness is that at any cost, Krishna should be pleased. And at no cost should Krishna be displeased. If Krishna were to return at any moment, they would not want the services, the expertise, the skills that they have developed personally serving him to be in any way less. And in fact, when Krishna does return to Braj, and it's time for the cowherd boys or the servants of Krishna to bathe him and dress him, even though they had not done it in a very long time. You know, Krishna, he spent 44 years away from Braj before he went back after the killing of Dantavakra. 44 years is a long time. We forget in what? A few days. If we don't keep doing something for a few days or keep refreshing something for a few days, we lose it. So this 44 years is a long time. But when Krishna came back and it came time for, you know, his bathing, everything was done just perfectly. Everything was laid out just right. There were no mistakes. Huh? And, you know, Mother Yashoda is there always. Very, with so much love for Krishna. She takes care of every detail. Nothing can pass her scrutiny. If it's not right, she'll let you know. No, you cannot do like this for Krishna. You must do like this. This is love. This is love for Krishna. This is love of God in the highest form. It means that I am secondary and Krishna is first, always. Krishna is first, always. So in the beginning stage, we may not be able to do that, but especially in the beginning stages, we must be dutiful. And each one of us has different duties. Here we see that Mother Devaki's duty is not to be in the room when Krishna's talking to his queens, but her duty is to go and cook and prepare Krishna's meal. So we may have different duties. Not everyone will be as absorbed or as inspired by one anga of devotional service as another. There are 9 angas of devotional service: hearing, chanting, worshipping, remembering, serving, praying, having mission, befriending, surrendering everything, giving up everything for Krishna. Not everyone, not all the devotees perform all of those angas. There's different also ways of analyzing this. There's deity worship, there's service and mission, there's preaching, there's literary work, there's menial work, and although all devotees are willing and joyful to do anything, not everyone does everything. Devotees take their duties to Krishna according to their nature and according to their inclination and desire, and according to the need. Sometimes they have to do the needful, even though they may desire to do something else. And all of this is done in devotional service with a sense of joy, because it is done for Krishna's pleasure. It is not done for our own pleasure, for our own satisfaction. So Devaki is realizing that Krishna wants to talk. Devotees are very subtle. They understand, and they're sensitive, and they're responsive. Devotional service is not mechanical. It is not something done mechanically. It is done with full heart. It is done with full knowledge. It is done with full conviction, with full heart, with full commitment, with love and affection. And therefore, the subtle intelligence becomes very refined in such states of consciousness. Devaki did not have to be told by Krishna, you know, better you be in another place, I want to talk to my queens now about certain things. She knew this is advanced devotional service, to know the heart of the person you're serving and respond accordingly without being asked. This is first class devotional service. Text 71. Stambhad antarita satyo devyo tishtan prabhu priya satya bhama natatraga tam vishno vichit undavam. The beloved queens of Lord Krishna stay hidden behind objects such as columns, not approaching him. But Satyabhama had not come there with the others. So Krishna asked about her from Uddhava. So this is one of the symptoms of devotional service in conjugal love. In particular, this conjugal love here being described is the nature of wedded love, sokhiya. And although there is a familiarity that comes from married love that makes the partners a little relaxed and not as shy with one another as maybe before they were married, certainly not in the relationship of lover and beloved outside of marriage. But at the same time, the queens had just witnessed something very extraordinary. They had just witnessed Krishna exhibit his bride bhava. Most of them were not conscious of having seen it. It's described in Lalita Madhava that the queens of Krishna are actually expansions of the gopis. Actually, all of Krishna's consorts, of all of incarnations, everywhere he goes, they are all expansions or expansions of expansions of the gopis. So one may think, what is the problem? They're gopis, so they should be aware of these things, so why are they being shy? Because in order to facilitate all of these different moods and all of these different relationships that Krishna has with his different devotees, Yoga Maya arranges for them to forget. And she even arranges for Krishna to forget. When the queens appeared in Dwarka, when the gopis appeared in Dwarka and became Krishna's queens, there was a whole sequence of events that happened before that. And then, after the marriage, you know, they forgot. They actually forgot. They could not remember that they were gopis before. And Krishna, he would also forget. And therefore, he could still hanker for the Raj Bhava of Vrindavan and the love of the gopis. Even though they were actually expansions of the gopis. Actually, he's going to reveal here, a little later in this chapter, that the only reason he married them was because he was feeling so much separation from the gopis, and they reminded him of the gopis. That's the only reason he married them. Can you imagine being a lady and having your husband tell you, the only reason I married you was because you reminded me of someone else? Well, the psychology of a lady just can't tolerate that. Their nature is, no, they want to have the husband exclusively to them, for them. So they wouldn't be too happy with that. Anyway, so now the queens are exhibiting this shyness because they had just seen something extraordinary. They had seen Krishna in this mood. They had watched Krishna interact, even if only slightly, with the gopis and those deity forms in New Vrindavan. And they were overwhelmed. Everyone was overwhelmed. You remember? You know, Satyabhama and And Padmavati, they lost control of themselves and they went running to embrace Krishna. Their conjugal feelings were so awakened by this form of Krishna as a coward boy, they could no longer tolerate themselves. And they got up and they were about to ruin the drama. And when Uddhava and Kalindi, you know, grabbed them and stopped them from going and ruining the drama. So they had seen something extraordinary. So now they're in a different mood with Krishna. You know, their conjugal love in married life is a little bit, you know, altered. Not altered, but they're shy now. They saw Krishna in another mood. They saw just how deep his relationships were with the gopis. So he's coming back, and they're like hiding behind the pillars. They're looking like, you know, what happened? What is this? Who is this Krishna? Is this the same Krishna? What's going on here? You know? Actually, these are all ways that Krishna has to increase his loving relationships with his devotees. The laws that govern relationship in the spiritual world are different completely, but they are similar in other ways because they are the reality and the loving exchanges we have with each other here in this material world are just perverted reflections of that reality. So therefore we can see different things, different laws that govern the laws of love are originating from Goloka, Vrindavan, and then are reflected in different places in Goloka, Vrindavan, and ultimately in Vaikuntha and the heavenly planets, and eventually into the material universes. So all of these relationships have things in common, even though they're, from the spiritual point of view, they're based on a completely different principle than the material relationships. We must become convinced of this. And we must become free from the influence of the material relationship in order to even understand what's being said here, what to speak of being able to act properly in the material world. If we think that our material loving relationships in the material world come first, then we become bewildered by undue material affection to the point where it causes us to forget our relationship with Krishna and our service to Krishna and what to speak of our relationship and the relationship and service of Krishna of our loved ones, then we will not be able to enter into loving relationships in a way that causes love for Krishna to come out and to be maintained. These are deep points. Are you getting these points? Are you getting these points? Not so easy to translate these points. They're a little subtle. So now Devaki is in the kitchen. Krishna is there in the hall with the queens, but there's one queen missing, Satyabhama. Satyabhama's nature is very contrary, different than Rukmini, and she is, you know, feeling contrary, and therefore she doesn't want to come in front of Krishna. We'll hear more about that, what the reason is. So he's asking from Uddhava, where's Satyabhama? Everyone is here except for Satyabhama. You know, Satyabhama is the expansion of Radharani. And Rukmini is the expansion of Chandravali, the dwarf. So therefore, Krishna wants to make sure that Satyabhama is in the room when he discusses this subject. Sri Haridas Bhubacha Vrindavane Yada Jato Vijayo Prabhatarchite Prabhos tadatanam bhavam abuddha bhamakam param Kam apya lokya devi di sahata driva durataha sita niliya durburbir uche padmavati kala. The Lord's servant, Uddhava, replied, when you took your glorious excursion to Vrindavan, which is embraced by right up the hill, your special mood might have bewildered the unintelligent, but your queens were able to perceive it. They therefore hid themselves, watching from a distance. Then the spiteful, weak-minded Padmavati addressed them. Okay, now we're going to hear from Padmavati. Now we're going to get a little relief, because in transcendental literature, in any literature, actually, there are different moods, and, you know, we can't be in the same mood all the time. We need variety of moods to be satisfied. So now, it's been a little intense. The subject matter has been a little intense. And every time that there's a need for some relief, then Padmavati comes out and speaks. Because the things that she says are ridiculous. They're ludicrous. And they cause comic relief, hasiras. We discussed this the other day. How hasiras, one of the indirect mellows, is very important in devotional service, because it goes with all the other rasas, first of all, and all the other direct rasas, and it gives this taste, this variety, this lightheartedness, this joy, an aspect of joy that is very essential in devotional life. It is like, you know, that special spice in a preparation that makes it different from any other preparation. You know, that special way of cooking here knows. Sometimes you can cook something the same, but there's that one spice. Sometimes cooks, when they're competing with one another, they won't tell each other every exactly thing. They're training somebody. They won't tell them that last spice, you know, that makes it just something special, or something special that others can see there, can appreciate there, spicy. Anyway, so now we're going to hear Padmavati. Commentary. Uddhava is sometimes called Haridas. Shukadev Goswami therefore says, Sivit Vanagiri Gronir Bhikshan Vusumitam Juman Krishnam Samsmarayi Ayan Reme Haridaso Prajaukasam. Seeing the rivers, forests, mountains, valleys, and flowering trees of Braj, Haridas Uddhava enjoyed inspiring the inhabitants of Vrindavan by reminding them of Lord Krishna. Bhagavatam 10:47-56. So this Haridas is a very important term. Sometimes, you know, we see so many devotees that are named in the history of Vaishnavism, so many devotees are named Haridas, because it means servant of Krishna. But actually the term Haridas is a great title. It is a very honorific title for a Vaishnava. Giri Govardhan is called Haridas Sivario by Radharani herself, actually. It was Radharani herself, Sanatana Goswami reveals, who refers to Giri Govardhan as Haridas Sivario, the best of Lord Krishna's servants. And here it's described that Uddhava is also called Haridas because he's such an intimate servant. Here, great servant, Haridas, means intimate servant, means servant who knows, who's close to the Lord, who knows the inner workings of the Lord, and also who serves the Lord with all his being, all his resources, everything. When Radharani glorifies Mary Govardhan to be Haridas Subhario, she says that he's serving Krishna with everything, with his body, with his the things he produces. Everything is given to Krishna for his service. This is Haridas. And Uddhava was like that. Uddhava was so much absorbed in Krishna consciousness that he would not put on clothes that were not worn first by Krishna. And therefore, his form even, he was so absorbed in thinking of Krishna that his form was very similar to Krishna's. Therefore, when he went to Vrindavan to see the gopis, they at first, from a distance, they thought, oh Krishna, is that Krishna? It's come. Such a great devotee. The greater a devotee we are, the more we remind other people of Krishna. When people see us, they should think, immediately they should say, Hare Krishna. That is the measure of a devotee, of how great a devotee is. Whenever anybody sees you, they become inspired to chant Hare Krishna. And they'd be happy, they feel happy. I mean, externally, that's why we dress the way we do, when we tilak, you know, shaved heads, all these things, to remind people of Krishna. It's not just for us, it's to remind one another of Krishna. We have a name, we take a name of Krishna, when we call each other by name, you know, we're reminding of Krishna. So Haridas Uddhava was called Haridas because he was so dear to Krishna that he was sent by Krishna to Vrindavan to remind the Vrindavasis of him in a very special way. They're always remembering Krishna. Krishna cannot go out of their heart. They cannot get Krishna out of their heart, even if they want to. There's so much love between Krishna and the Vrindavasis that they're tied to one another. They can't get away. Even if they want to sometimes, they're suffering from separation and they want to forget. They can't forget. It's impossible. So if only a very confidential person can be sent in such circumstances. Text 74-75. Now we're going to hear Padmavati, so to speak. The mood is going to change now completely. Devakyari punya bhine re re rukmini dur bhage satya bhame bade hanta jamba bhajata yobara pashyate dam ito vihapsyam abhimanam vimunchata abhira abhiran idasyasya tapasyam purutotamam. O Devaki, devoid of pious credits, O unfortunate Rukmini, wretched Satyavan, Jambavati, and you other miserable women, look here. From now on, you should give up your pride and undergo the great penances to become servants of those Abhira nomad women. Commentary. The queens of Dwarka may have won Krishna's hand in marriage, but they should not think that they have a stronger hold on his heart than the Braj Gopis. The Abhiras are of a degraded class of nomads, whereas the cowherds of Nanda are respectable twice-born Vaishyas. But because Nanda's community is engaged in the same cowherding business as the outcast nomads, and also just out of spite, Padmavati calls Nanda's gopas abhiras. Chukadev Goswami mentions the Abhira tribe in the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, 2.4.18. Kirata hunan vipalun pulinda kukukisha Abhira kanka yavana kshadaya yen ye cha papa vidupashaya shraya chudyanti tasmaya prabhavishnave namaha. Kirantas, Hunas, Andras, Pulindas, Pukashas, Aviras, Kankas, Yavanas, members of the Kasa race, and even other addicted to sinful acts can be purified by taking shelter of the devotees of the Lord. For He is the supreme power. I beg to offer my respectful obeisances unto Him. So, the nature of an envious person test yourself, and every one of us must test ourselves as we progress in devotional life, as we progress in devotional service. In the very beginning, we may do our services kind of mechanically, and you know, they're measured by, you know, how clean the spot is, or you know, how many circles you offer, or how something tastes, or you know, other ways of measuring the worth of what we're doing. But as we advance in devotional life, as we advance in devotional service, then we still have to evaluate ourselves and be evaluated. And one of the ways you can evaluate your freedom from envy is how often or how many times a day do you appreciate someone else? How many times a day do you actually say something nice about someone? How many times a day do you appreciate the service of another person behind their back, not in front of their face, behind their back? What is the predominant feature of your conversation when you're not with another person and you're talking about them? Would you say positive things or negative things? Interesting question. Everybody has to be on. This is what Satam means. In the very beginning of the Bhagavatam, the second verse, it describes Satam. The word Satam is used in the verse in context that the Bhagavatam is appreciated by those who are not envious. Nirmatsaranam Satam. Those who are not envious and those who are honest. So this is a lesson for us, because Padmavati, you know, this is Leela. Padmavati is also a devotee of Krishna. But, you know, she has a special role to play. And it's described earlier that when her son was killed, everybody rejoiced when it comes to, except for one person, Padmavati. Like Dhritarashtra knew that Krishna was God, and he knew, you know, that there was no question of defeating Krishna. But because he had this material, mundane attachment to his sons, which was preventing him from actually giving the son the proper instruction, he was submitting to his son's nonsense, submitting to his son's evil tendencies and enviousness of the Pandavas. So we should actually know where we are spiritually. We should submit ourselves to evaluation by our spiritual master and persons who we trust. And if we don't trust anybody, then we're in deep trouble. But even if we only trust someone, We should search that person out, or persons out, and find out how we're doing. Inquire how we're doing. And one of the ways that we can tell how we're doing is how much we're willing to glorify Vaishnavas. Not criticize Vaishnavas, but glorify Vaishnavas. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur makes very strong statements about this in Madhurya Kadambini. He says that it's not just that this rule applies to the very, very elevated Vaishnavas either. It applies to all Vaishnavas. And even in the beginning stages, a Vaishnava may still have residue of sin in their mind, in their character, in their behavior. But a person who is determined and fixed in performing devotional service, that quality supersedes supersedes the qualities that still may be lingering in the character. Because for one who is fixed in devotional service, the pure impurities are sure to go. They are to be considered, Srila Prabhupada explained to us that of course this does not apply to people who are unsincere, who have ulterior motives. This is talking about a devotee who has no ulterior motives, but who may not be completely purified yet, and still may be under the influence sometimes of material desires or whatever. But because the motive is pure and the intention is pure, then the devotional service is steady and the desire is steady for devotional service. So such persons, you know, are not to be criticized. If they are, then it makes offense. So Devaki here is, Padmavati, she's saying something insensitive. The queens have just witnessed Krishna's attachment for the gopis, and they're feeling shy. And, you know, rather than treating them with care, Padmavati, because she's envious, and she personifies something incorrect in the mentality of devotional service. Therefore, she's pointing those things out. Oh, you should, you know, you're free, you don't have any pious credits, you should be ashamed of yourselves. You should, you know, go be the servants of the Avira, class. You know, making the person feel embarrassed and making the person feel ashamed. This is what criticism does. When you criticize other people, what to speak of, you criticize Vaishnavas. This is what it does. It degrades your consciousness. It degrades the consciousness. We're unnecessarily critical. When we judge by some external, superficial, material value system, and we don't look to the quality of the heart and the quality of the service and the relationship that one has with Krishna. Of course, sometimes when we're in an organization, a social structure, like a family, or here we have an ashram, or a temple, or, you know, society, there's sometimes a necessity to point out the faults of others in order to keep the social order, or in order to help purify and bring people up, to train people. There's a necessity to find fault, but that is different. That is different. The rule that Prabhupada gave us about this, and it's sometimes confusing to devotees, because we hear that we're not supposed to criticize, and if we say anything negative, then we're offenders, and it has a negative effect on our devotional life. But at the same time, we see sometimes we have to be chastised by the spiritual master, by the authority, or corrected in certain some way. And then we have a tendency to put that onto the authority, that, oh, this person is not qualified because he's finding fault with me. I don't know if you know, you saw it in the paper? In the paper there's these devotees now in the Vrindavan temple, you know, who were sitting and having a hunger strike, you know, in order to protest the cruelty of the administration, you know. Of course, if you look at these persons, they're all very hefty, hearty, looking like lads, you know, it doesn't look like they're like suffering too much. But anyway, this is the point. The point is that we have to be careful in our dealings with one another. And sometimes when you're in an organization, like I said, even a family is an organization, then there has to be lines drawn, and there have to be sometimes things pointed out, you know, when we're living together with one another. This is not necessarily offense. But when we don't have, Prabhupada gave us this yardstick. If you don't have, first of all, the faith of the person, if the person you're instructing does not have faith in you, or if you don't have a position, you know, of superior and subordinate relationship, then yeah, you shouldn't try to instruct that person. I mean, Prabhupada would give general instructions to in lectures to everyone, but when it came to actually instructing a person, you know, personally about their lives or whatever, he would not instruct people who were not surrendered to him, who did not have faith in him. These things are all part of the science of devotional service. They're all part of the science of devotional service. And as we advance in devotional service, our dealings with one another become more and more subtle. And we become more and more sensitive to the feelings of others. So, generally in material consciousness, we always want people to be sensitive to our feelings. Right? Is it? We always want people to be sensitive to our feelings. But when it comes to being sensitive to the other person's feelings, sometimes we don't care. So these are all ways of evaluating how we are in devotional service. Our, you know, like you take the temperature. You know, usually disease is accompanied by fever, especially serious disease. So you measure the degree of the disease by the temperature. The temperature is, you know, 38, 39, 40, 41. Well, 41 is like, you're, you know, it's very serious. You're on your way out. 42 finished. So we should be measuring ourselves and be willing to be measured by those who are more advanced than we are in our daily lives. So that we can bring down the fever. So we can bring down the symptoms of material contamination. The symptoms of material contamination are lust and greed and anger, avarice, craziness, illusion. Not that we embrace those things on the plea of being transcendentalists and don't know how to deal with one another properly. These pastimes in Brihat Bhagavatamrita and in all the revealed scriptures, particularly when the pastimes of the Lord in Vrindavan are being explained, they give us such wonderful ideas about how to be subtle and how to take more and more things into consideration, how to really have loving exchanges. So this is an example of how not to having loving exchange, where a person's feelings are sensitive, and you point out those things. Yes, you're like that, you're like this, this is Padmavati. You're like this, you're like that, you're like this, what's wrong with you? You should just... So now, I'm going to stop here because the next verse is a little long, the purport is long. We'll stop there. Hare Krishna.